Amen. Go ahead and grab a seat. Turn in your Bibles, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, we'll begin there in a moment. And actually, we're going to try to have the scriptures on the screen today. And so you can follow along in your Bibles or with the screen. It is so good to be here today and to be able to worship God together. I know a lot of you guys are coming back from spring break. Welcome back. Some of us were here last week without you, and we're glad you're coming back in town, and I hope you had a great time. This is, I believe, the first time that I've preached here since I have been an official member of the Northview Church of Christ. And I'm a for real member. I mean, I even come on Wednesday nights. I mean, you know, I'm going to have an extra halo in heaven or something for that. Speaking of Wednesday nights, this Wednesday night, it is a men's midweek here at Northview. And as is the custom, they're actually going to have dinner beforehand at 6:30. Now, the only problem is Jim is usually in charge of the dinner, but he's going to be out of town. So, you know, Steve Sapp's in charge of the dinner. And so, you know, it might be a bag of crystals. I don't know. But we are having midweek. But I tell you, it is so good to be a part of this church. And everywhere I go, people that I know, people that I meet, I tell them, you gotta come check out the Northview Church of Christ. I think something really special is going on here. And some of my very best friends, Blake Neal and Steve Sapp, John Carman. If you don't know John Carman, get to know him. Bob Harple. I mean, I've got some of my best friends in the world here. I look forward to getting up and going to church on Sunday. You know, that's a gift. Not everyone does that. I am so thankful for Steve Sapp and his preaching every Sunday. I really am. I just want to take a second to say that. I tell you what, I became a Christian here in Atlanta when I was 17 years old, which was 30 years ago. And Steve Sapp was my preacher. And so I grew up hearing Steve Sapp preach, and it is such a treat to come every Sunday and hear Steve preach the word. You know it's going to be funny, but it's going to be convicting, it's going to be challenging, and I guarantee you this, you're going to remember something from the sermon. And it is consistent every single week, and I'm so thankful that I get to be a part of this church and the preaching here. All right. I got a lot to say and a short time to say it. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight." Boy, that sounds nice, doesn't it? That's a cool way of putting that. Trust in the Lord. All your heart. Don't worry about what you think about things. Just trust in God. That's nice to say, but man, is that hard to do. It's hard just to let go and lean not on your own understanding. We like to get our own understanding on things, don't we? We like to control our kids, our money. We got a song in my house I made up. It's called "We Like to Throw Away Money." We like to throw away money. That's what we like to do. I start singing that because I get tired of it. and we want to control and we want to take the reins. And God says, I want you to let go and let me work it out. Trust me with your kids. Trust me. When they start talking about, you know, I can't wait until I can just get this tattoo and that tattoo and pierce this and go here. Trust God. With your money, with your job. Trust in me. Lean not on your own understanding. You know, luckily, though, it's tough to do, but we have examples in the Bible over and over and over again of men and women who lived this out, who trusted God. And we can go back and read about them and think about them and meditate on what they did and grow in our own faith. And we're going to look at one of those men today. His name was Joseph. Look in Genesis chapter 50. Genesis chapter 50. We're going to look at the life of Joseph. Now, you may know about Joseph, you may not, but really is a fascinating life. And the cool thing is, in the Bible, we're going to flip to the end of the story. We're going to flip to the end of Joseph's life and see how God worked it out. In Genesis chapter 50, look in verse 18. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended me harm, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Here at the end of Joseph's life, he realizes God's plan for his life. It hadn't been real easy, and we're going to get into that. He had been sold into slavery. He had been put in prison. And yet at the end of his life, he realized, hey, God did have a plan the whole time. I really had nothing to worry about. In fact, not only did God have a plan, but because of me, I'm going to save my family and everybody around me because God used my life. At the end, he realized, you know, God kind of knew what he was doing in all this. You know, it would be nice, wouldn't it, to be able to turn over to chapter 50 of your life. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, we think, we hope, if it all worked out good. Turn to chapter 50, and you know, there you are. You're gray. You're fit. Your kids are gathered around you. They're beautiful. All the grandkids, all monogrammed, and you know, everything's. You had enough money to make it all the way. And everything worked out. And, you know, it would be nice to know the ending. And, you know, it's true. It is nice. It's less stressful to know the ending. If you got any sports fans, you know how it is. If you watch a game on DVR that you already know how it ends. That's nice. But, you know, the truth is, it's not nearly as fun. You know what I mean? It's like occasionally people, I am a college football nut, okay? Like Saturdays on the fall, we ain't getting together. Don't invite me to the apple orchard on Saturday in the fall. And for the love of God, don't get married. Or die on a Saturday in the fall. Because I ain't coming. You know, that's so selfish of you. But occasionally, one time I had a dual wedding, and so I couldn't get out of it. And, you know, I try, because I don't want to know the ending. You know, I'm like, don't tell me, don't tell, you know, don't look at my phone. I don't want to know, because part of the fun of it is not knowing. Yeah. It's the roller coaster. It's the, you know, that's why I have no hair. I've been watching Florida the last few years. But God's going to work it all out. And that's part of the fun in life, is going through those times. But you know, the truth is, God has to work on us. You know, Joseph didn't just end up here, everything great, in chapter 50. He had to go through some things to get there. Let's look back. Look in chapter 37 of Genesis, in verse 1. Genesis chapter 37 and verse 1. Let's look back now at Joseph when he was 17 years old. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made him a richly ornamented robe for him to wear. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, and they could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. You're going to love it. We were all binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright where your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream. And he said to his brothers, "Listen, I had another dream. This time, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father this as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I bow and brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this in mind. You know, we see Joseph here at 17. And you see a lot about Joseph, right? He had the cockiness, the confidence of a 17-year-old. Remember when you were 17? I've told you before, my dad, I'll never forget it, he stopped me. I was just talking back to him. He said, Jonathan, stop. I want you to go write a book right now. What? Yes, son, you need to go write a book right now while you got all the answers. I'm telling you, you ought to do it. You ought to write it. Had a little bit of arrogance, had a little, he was a tattletale. It said he took his father a bad report about his brothers. Nobody likes a tattletale. Brothers didn't like him anyway. Dad was, you know, thought he was awesome, made him all this robe, and he's like, "I got a robe." And I think he was arrogant and prideful. How do I know? Because he had this dream, but he didn't just had it, he told it. You see what I'm saying? I mean, here's the deal. The dream actually ended up being accurate. This is what happened. But just because something's true, not everybody wants to hear about it. You know what I'm talking about? So not to brag, but I've lost a little weight. I don't know if you could tell. Lost a little weight. And yeah, you know, it is good. And I mean, I didn't need to or anything, but I just, you know, I was just wanting to. I actually have followed through with a New Year's resolution. First time ever. Now, I ain't making any progress. This is April, so I may balloon back up come football season. But it's interesting. I'm all excited about my diet, but you know, not everybody's so excited about me sharing about my diet. For instance, I had lunch with Steve and Kim the other day. Now, I appreciate sweet Kim because she was really interested. She's like, Jonathan, tell me all about your diet. And she asked all these questions. And, you know, when you're, yeah, she's like, now, what are you eating? And are you exercising? Oh, now, would you say it's more about the diet or the exercise? Steve, what do you think? You know, I mean, she's just. Steve, after the lunch, like, Johnny, you got to chill on the diet. You know, people aren't as excited. You know, the truth is, though, here's Joseph. God has to deal, for God to use us, to use you, certainly to use me, he's got to deal with our pride. He has to deal with our pride. You know, God is serious about pride. He is. James chapter 4, it says, God opposes the proud. Proverbs 8 says, God says, I hate pride and arrogance. Proverbs 16, pride goes before destruction. You know, for God to use us, he deals with our pride. He gets in there. He humbles us. He deals with our pride. You know, one thing I was thinking, I think one of the biggest ways that we can be prideful today is by being judgmental. By being judgmental. You know, that's kind of one of those things a lot of us been doing ever since we got here today. Right? We're judging things. I don't like that song. Why we always got to sing all that? I don't like it with the instruments. I don't like it without the instruments. Well, that girl, you know, I mean, we tend to be judgmental. Even though Jesus kind of made it real clear what he thought about being judgmental. Did he not? Have you not ever read Matthew chapter 7? What does Jesus says? Don't you judge. Why? Well, because you're going to be judged. You ever thought about that? The judgment you use, guess what? That's going to be used on you. Don't go seeing a speck of sawdust in your brother's. Hey, let me get that out. When you got a big old freaking telephone pole in your own eye. I think it says something like that, right? I don't know if it says freaking. We don't want to be judged, but we judge others. You know, I had a grandmother that lived with us. Awesome. She lived to be 93. I love my grandmother. I think about things she said all the time. One of the things she would always say, she said, Lord, she said it like this, give me mercy, not justice. Give me mercy. You know what? I think a lot of us are going to be saying when we stand before the throne of God, Lord, give me mercy, not justice. I ain't looking to be judged justly. Why are we always trying to judge justly on everybody else? You know, we judge people before we know them. Before we know them. You ever just saw somebody, man, I don't like that guy. I don't like her. What don't you? Just way walk. You know, we do it. We judge them before we know them. Here's the deal. There are so many times I have done that. And we don't say that. We don't. I mean, some of us do. Some of us do. But most of us is just inside. But you know what I have found? When I actually take a few minutes and talk to somebody, 9 times out of 10, I mean, there's always that exception. Sometimes I'm like, I was dead on. But 9 times out of 10, I actually like the person. If you take a little bit of time and talk, you'll find out they're like you. They got the same. You know, go out to lunch with somebody. I love what Jim and Steve have been doing on the one another passages, having people to your homes. Because guess what happens when you get, you say, you know, I like that person. You may not like you. You may have been judging me for years. I guarantee you, you take me to lunch, you're going to like me. Maybe. I might be that 9th to 10th guy. He really was a jerk. You know, we judge people that think differently than us. You know, I have found in the church there's two kinds of people. People that got a real guilty conscience and people that don't. So I'm over here, guess which one? Not real guilty conscience. So if you got a guilty conscience, you're like, man, he's already said frickin', he's already, you know. Steve talked about The Bachelor, you know. If you're real guilty conscience, that bothers you. But and then so we can be judgmental on those people. Or if you don't have a guilty conscience, then you're like, man, you're so, you know. We judge people's religious experiences. I used to do that all the time because it was different than mine. And you know how I'd get around the whole Matthew 7? I'd say, well, this isn't just a judgment. This is a fact. Well, I said, you're sitting in a chair. Is that a judgment or a fact? Well, it's a fact. If I say you're sitting in the chair because you're lazy, that's a judgment. That's a bunch of hogwash. What do I know what a fact is? You know, we can be so judgmental. We judge because we haven't been in that situation. You ever had a person without kids trying to tell you how to raise your kids? Oh, Lordy. I'll never forget, my kids were little. Yeah, they were out of control. Like all kids are. This 17-year-old babysitter sat me down to tell me what I needed to be doing. She lost her tip. You know, you hadn't been there. You don't know what you're talking about. I used to do it with college parents. I was the campus minister here for the church, and college, they would send their kids, and they would be so worried and scared, and I'd be like, man, what's wrong with these parents? They need to grow up. Let them go. Till I'm a parent. My kid going to college. God has to deal with us. He had to deal with Joseph. Brothers got tired of it. And we don't have time to read it. I'd encourage you to go back and read this whole story. But he went back to his father. He was coming back. And they said, here comes that dreamer. We got something for him. We're going to put a dream up. We're going to put a dream on him. We're going to kill him. That's how much they hated it. We are going to kill him. One of the brothers said, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in a well or something, you know. And then these Ishmaelites were coming around. They said, you know what? Hey, we don't get anything if we kill him. Let's sell him. We'll get some money at least. But see, God was moving. God was working. God, things happen in our lives. We're like, what is happening? And yet God has a plan. Because he sold him to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. And he ended up in Potiphar's house. Chapter 39, we'll read this in verse 1. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he had put him in charge of the household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in his house and in the field. So he left Joseph in Joseph's care everything he had. And Joseph and with Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, the master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Real subtle. But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master doesn't concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. You know, what a story here. He's sold into slavery. He ends up at Potiphar's house. And, you know, he just says, you know, sometimes when you're in a bad situation, you just got to do the right thing. I'm just going to start doing the right thing. You're in a sorry job, just start doing a good job. It's your sorry job, and maybe something will turn around. He just starts doing good, and God starts blessing him, and good things start happening. And, you know, everything's going well until the master's wife says, "Hey, well-built and handsome, come to bed with me." You know, this was a temptation. You know that he was tempted, and yet it says he refused to sleep with her. And he didn't just say, you know, I'm scared to do it because, you know, if Potiphar finds out or this or that. He says, "How could I do such a thing and sin against God?" He wasn't just worried about the consequences. He's worried about hurting God and his relationship with God. I mean, that's really what it should be for us when we're tempted with sin. Not who's going to find out or what this or what that. I just care what God thinks about it. And so he says he refused to sleep with her, but he also refused to even be around her. Catch that? My experience with sin is, and I've got a little bit of experience, the closer I get, the further I fall. I mean, if you're flirting with sin, you're usually in it. You know, we got people in here that are really trying not to sin. We've got people that are dating that are trying to keep their relationship pure until they get married. Now, I know that is crazy. That's crazy. But people are trying to do that. Because that's what the Bible says to do. But if you're trying to do that, you got to avoid some things. You ain't down in the basement watching 50 Shades of Grey late at night with your PJs on. I mean, you know, you're not going to reach your goal. No, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to take just a minute here and share some things personally that I have struggled with in my life. And I've never shared this publicly. I debated, but, you know, why not? Stream it live. I have battled addiction to alcohol since I was a teenager. I have. You know, I remember the first time I had a drink. It's like 14, 15 years old. I got into my dad's wine cabinet. I had a big glass of red wine. You know, most 14-year-olds don't think that tastes great. I loved it. I couldn't get enough. And it caused a lot of trouble in high school, but luckily when I was 17, I became a Christian. And, you know, I stopped drinking because I was 17 and, you know, it wasn't legal. And, you know, so I didn't drink for a few years. But then when I turned 21, I'm like, oh, you know, that was just young. I'll drink. And so I drank, but it started to become a problem again. See, if you've got kind of this thing, it will become a problem if you understand addiction at all. And so I remember Steve having a talk with me saying, you know, Johnny, I'm not sure you should be drinking because it seems to be a problem. And so I didn't. I quit drinking while I was in the ministry because I didn't want to lose my job. Follow me? So I got out of the ministry in 2003. I said, well, you know, I think I can handle it now. So I started drinking. Well, I almost lost my marriage. So I quit drinking. Then I ended up getting divorced anyway. Guess what I started to do? Started drinking. And from 2011 to 2013, it was some dark years. And, you know, God was working on me. And it was tough and it was hard. And I had to learn some hard lessons. And when you know what's right and you're doing what's wrong, so anyway, I wasn't expecting that, but I can tell you a lot of stories I'm going to leave out. I'm not going to live stream everything, but I will tell you about the last day I had a sip of alcohol. It was August 14th, 2013. August 14th, it was a Sunday, and I woke up about 4 in the morning that Sunday. And because I had passed out and I didn't know what I'd done the night before and didn't know where or what, and I woke up with so much fear and terror and anxiety and pain. And I did on that day the only thing I knew to do, and that was to get up and pour myself a drink. Sunday morning, 4 a.m. So I started drinking. And you know what happened? I started feeling a little better. I did. About 10 o'clock Sunday morning, I was feeling pretty good. And you know, it's 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to church. I mean, I was raised right. So I went to church drunk. It wasn't this church. I've never been here drunk that I know of, but I went to church. And then after church, I went to Taco Mac and kept drinking. And I fell asleep, passed out on the bar. And I remember them waking me up saying, sir, you got to leave. You ever seen somebody drunk in public? I mean, what a loser. That's me. And so that was the last day I had a sip of alcohol, because I woke up the next day and I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, you know, I just feel like God's got a little something more for you than this. I think your kids deserve a little better than this. I think your friends and your family deserve a little better. And I don't know, I just said, you know, and I went and got some help. You know, that's what you got to do with addiction. You got to get help. And I went and got some help. And that's about 5.5 years ago. And let me tell you, God has helped me. He has changed my life. God has removed the obsession of alcohol from my life. It doesn't matter. It's just not a part of my life. It's not a part. And I don't care if you drink. Here's the thing. I'm not anti-alcohol. A lot of people drink. It's fine. Steve preached about Jesus, what'd he make? 900 bottles of wine? That's great. I'm not like Mr. Teetotaler. Oh, you can drink up. Go for it. It's just not good for me. I have found I'm a better man without alcohol. And a lot of people say amen to that. So I got sober. And God has blessed me. In fact, if I had made a list there on August 15th, 2013, all that I wanted to get out of sobriety, if I had made a list of that, I would have been cutting myself short. He has done miraculous things in my life and blessed me in incredible ways. So we're going to get on down to it here. Chapter 39 and verse 11. You know, alcohol may not be your thing, but what is? Because I've found, not being judgmental or anything, we all got stuff. We got junk in the trunk. I mean, we got stuff going on in our lives. Whether it be alcohol, whether it be drugs, whether it be lying, whether it be greed, whether it be selfishness, whether it be pornography. I mean, it is crazy today how easily it is to access pornography. Let's just be real, right? You used to have to work hard to see somebody naked. Not anymore. You just bam, bam, wham. You know what I'm saying? You got to overcome whatever it is, whether it's self-inflicted or not. You know, most of my problems have been nobody's fault but mine. Like we used to sing. That was always such a negative song. Nobody. But that's how it is. Some of us go through problems and we didn't do anything. Like this guy. Look in verse 11, chapter 39. One day he went to the house and attended his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." I mean, she was relentless. But he left her, the cloak in his hand, and ran out the house. I mean, that's how you got to deal with sin. When she saw that he had left the cloak in her hand and run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said, "this guy's come to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came in here to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." His master heard this, his wife's story. He said, "Look how this slave has treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him, put him in prison, and with the palace where the king kept his prisoners. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because God had given him success, whatever he did. You know, sometimes things come at you, it ain't your fault. Dude got in trouble for trying to do what was right. I mean, I get defensive. Even if you accuse me of something that I did do, I'm defensive about it. You ever do that? Somebody accuse you of something, you know you did it, but you're like, how dare you? That's how I am. But God forbid you accuse me of something that I really didn't do. In fact, I was trying to do the right thing. Oh, it's on. He took it. He goes to prison. He goes, "Well, this stinks. I'm in prison for doing the right thing." I wonder what God's... We try to fit... That's why we can't lean on our own understanding, because God's kind of ahead of it all. See, because he was in prison, because while he was in prison, guess who else got thrown in prison? The king's cupbearer and baker. They ticked off the king. He throws them in prison. Well, they go to prison, and guess who's there? Joseph. And guess what? He's in charge. And so while they're there, they have these dreams, and God gives Joseph the interpretation of the dreams. And then they get let out of prison, but Joseph is still there, and he says, "Hey, guys, listen, remember me now. Remember I interpreted those dreams for you. Remember me when you talked to Pharaoh down here in the prison." Guess what they did? They forgot all about him. Until 2 years had passed, he'd been in prison for 2 years. Then Pharaoh has a dream. He has a crazy dream. It was like these fat seven fat cows, and then there was like seven skinny cows, and they ate up the fat cows. And he has this dream. He's like, what the heck? And then the cupbearer says, oh, I know this dude back in prison. Remember when you sent me to prison? Don't. You killed the baker, but you let me live. I had this dream. And this dude can interpret it. And Pharaoh says, go get him. So Joseph appears before him in chapter 41, verse 14, and we're going to close here. Chapter 41 and verse 14 says, so Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Can you imagine this? This prisoner, Joseph, the slave, coming before the Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream. And no one can interpret it. But I have heard, it said, of you that you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, this is his chance. This is it. You would think he'd be like, oh, yeah, Pharaoh. You're looking to interpret a dream? I am your dream man. I can interpret it like nobody's business. This was his chance. Look what he says. I cannot do it. I can't do it. Now that doesn't seem like the right answer. I can't do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. He says, I can't do it. Do you see the transformation in Joseph from a 17-year-old boy when it was all about him? God had worked in his life. He had taught him through temptation, through suffering, through ups and downs and the roller coaster of life. He says, I can't do it, but you know my God can. And he tells him, guess what? Those seven fat cows, those are 7 years of prosperity that we're going to have. So you need to store up a lot of food. Because after those seven ugly cows, they're going to eat. That's 7 years of famine, and it's coming. And you need to be ready because it's coming. And then Pharaoh says, well, gosh, can anyone do better at being in charge of this than you? And so he puts Joseph, his right-hand man, second to only Pharaoh. And so when his family was in need, they're starving to death during the 7 years of famine, they appeared before their brother they had sold into slavery. And he tells them, hey, don't worry about it. You meant it to harm me, but God meant it for good. God meant it for good. It's all going to work out. You know, that's why today all we need to do is trust God. Trust God and lean not on our own understanding. Thank you.